I could get to watching as Halloween was all Halloween movies, and then at Christmas time was all Christmas movies with Christmas horror thrown in there. It's like festival-free Epcot. You live for those moments when it's when there's nothing going on.
Oh, you gotta hit the Disney files for that one. That's deep. That's a deep cut.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted, how about we welcome everybody, and we'll welcome back Clarissa, and we welcome Ryan Terry to the show.
Very happy to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, we're happy to have you. And Clarissa.
Welcome back, Clarissa.
Thank you.
She sounds motivated to be here.
So. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Well, we got a special pack show tonight, right? Because we're doing Game of Thrones as one of our main trailers tonight. But I am not versed in Game of Thrones, so I thought we'd call in some reinforcements.
Reinforcements.
Yeah, because it would have been boring talking to myself all night.
Or trying to convince me to watch seven seasons of something that I haven't watched anything of. So,
right. So, Ryan, you're a big Game of Thrones fan, I understand.
Oh, yes. In fact, I've got my my sigil right here. I know it's kind of dark in my room, but it's a Targaryen sigil because I'm Team Dany. So I wanted to dress appropriately for the episode tonight.
Your hair color is totally not Team Dany, though.
And that's not bad. Thanks to Lady Clairol, we can be whatever color we want.
Oh, jeez.
I guess so. All right, so I know Ryan, for some other reasons, can't have or isn't drinking any beer tonight, so he gets a pass.
That's right.
But how about we just crack some beers really quick, and then we'll move on with the show.
All right, we'll get into it a little bit. I have a beer. So I took Audrey, my 13-year-old. I miss...
Wait, Ted. I might have to report. I'm a mandated reporter. I might have to report you. You're taking her where? To the liquor store? Or to
I took
a bar?
I took her to Handy Market, which sells eggs and groceries. And I'm standing in front of the beers, and she's like, how do you pick beer? Do you judge books by their cover? And I'm like, no, but I judge beers by their labels. Because, you know, that's the best way to judge a beer. So I have this beer called Tres Chicos, and I'm probably saying that incorrectly, but it's a triple IPA brewed with Chico yeast and Simcoe, Chinook, and Mosaic hops. And it's a Three Magnet Brewing Company out of Olympia, Wisconsin. What's this? 100 plus IBU. Is that high?
That's as max as you could go. 100 is like every... It's like when you say, is this bitter? You just say all.
It's
a 10.5 ABV. So I will crack this. And last week we didn't get a good pour, so I'm going to try to get a better pour.
I know it sucks that I can't have beer this evening because I have Game of Thrones beer glasses.
Oh.
What?
So I know. It just would have fit so well. My water tumbler at work is Game of Thrones, and I've got a Game of Thrones the ornaments and all kinds of stuff. And actually, I do have this. It's right next to me on my desk. I got it as a Christmas present. It's the official Game of Thrones coloring book.
Oh, nice. And Ryan, I would have figured you were the kind of guy who drinks and knows.
I usually am. I do know an awful lot, but I've been having to. I can only drink at dinner with my liners, but my teeth will thank me in 6 months, and then I'll just get back to drinking.
That's right.
Just whatever I want.
And Ted couldn't be more lost with that Game of Thrones meme. So you know, there you go.
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
All right, so Clarissa and I are sharing, well, not sharing, we each have one. It's a Modern Times, we've had Modern Times in the past, Black House Coffee Roasty Stout. So Clarissa, mm-hmm. What can you tell me about this?
Apparently it's 75% Ethiopian and 25% Sumatran coffee.
Mm.
I know, I just think it sounds fantastic.
All right, so we're going to have to crack this thing. I don't even know. It looks like it's 5.8% by volume, so we're drinking a pint of it. All right.
Oh, That's
go ahead and crack it there, Clarice. We'll get our pour and we'll give a quick tasting. So, Ted, how do you enjoy your beer? Is it all 100 plus bitters or what?
Yeah, it's over the top with the bitters. It's probably as bitter as you can make it, like you said. But it is comparable to others. So I think we're well on the way. I'm glad it's not too hazy. It's got a little bit of a haze to it. But like we said, that's kind of a fad.
Smells fantastic.
Oh yeah, it smells like, you know, Ryan's morning coffee. So, lady and gentlemen, how is everyone's week this week? That's kind of our trailer junkie shtick, is we introduce our week before we get into our trailers.
So, Ryan, you want to go first? You can kind of do another, sure, a little longer intro to what you do and who you are and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Sure. I had a great week. It was a short week for me because I took off on Monday because I had a cousin visiting me over last weekend. So it was a nice short week. So when I got to work on Tuesday, it's like, this isn't Monday. This actually is Tuesday. So then my week was shorter. This week I have two jobs. My full-time position is with Feld Entertainment. I'm a video editor for Disney on Ice and Monster Jam.
Oh,
cool. Oh, nice.
Cool.
So this week I was helping to select music for a new Disney on Ice commercial. So I was listening to a lot of whimsical music to figure out what options to send to the folks upstairs and say, this is what I think, works. And they get back with me. That's more or less the job that pays the bills, sends my family and friends to shows, but isn't really my passion. Hope none of, well, actually, it's okay if they're listening right now, but it's not really my passion. It's just something that I can do. And I always wanted to work in show business. And I think it just goes to show that sometimes the very thing that you want, once you get it, you realize, perhaps this isn't exactly what I wanted.
Right.
Because I love film and I love theme parks and theater to a more minor extent. So I'm like, this is perfect. But I think it went to show me what I truly loved. And so for the last 3 years, I've had the privilege of being a part-time professor at the University of Tampa, which is a highly ranked school. And I've been able to teach screenwriting there.
Wow.
And over the last 3 years, I've discovered that this is truly what I love. I always knew I loved talking about films, but now I have the opportunity to teach and get to talk about it. So it's really been an enriching experience that I absolutely love. And so after 3 years teaching, it's like, this is what I want to do. So a few months ago, I started searching for a full-time teaching position, whether it's, here in Tampa or in other states. There's about four or five different states that I've, been applying for positions in. Because that's really what I want to do. Because I've worked at Disney World, and I've done Disney on Ice, and I've worked at a couple of different universities and spent more time in higher education than in the corporate world. And I really love higher education, and so that's where I want to be. So that's what I do. My real passion is teaching screenwriting. I specialize in the American horror film. That is my absolute favorite genre. And whenever I can integrate the American horror film into my class, I do. My students know it. And so, like, all the examples from films that we watch, well, I'd say most of them anyway, are horror films. So they know what I love. And there's just so much that we can learn from them and so much that they teach us, and that it makes them just an incredible source of inspiration and material to use in the classroom. And as a result of teaching it, I've also learned a lot myself. And so I tell my students all the time that I see myself as a perpetual student. Just because I went to grad school doesn't mean that the learning stops. And I learn from them all the time. And I've seen some great writers come out of my class. And who knows, maybe they'll go on to win, Emmys or Oscars, because they, all screenwriters start somewhere. And I'm often asked, does a screenwriter or an individual who wants to pursue film, you know, have to go to film school. And I tell my students up front, no, you don't have to. However, what this does provide you with is an opportunity to connect with like-minded individuals, connect with experts in the field. You know, just because they're an academic may not be in the field doesn't mean that they haven't studied the field at length and know a lot about it. And it's up to the students to take that knowledge and apply it. And so take advantage of the knowledge resources from your professors and then learn from your other students. You know, make friends. These same friends could be the ones that, you know, help you on your first short film. So although it's not a requirement, I think it's a great idea for a budding filmmaker to go to film school because you want to place yourself in an environment that can set you up for success later. And that's how I explain it to them. I can't teach talent. I mean, you either have it or you don't. I can't teach you to have a voice. You either have it or you don't. But what I can teach you are the mechanics, are the theories, the science behind everything, and then looking at film from a critical perspective. I mean, I can teach you those things, but you got to bring the rest to the table, and then you have to take that from the classroom, and you got to go out there and make films. Always be in some state of production, whether it's pre-production, production, post, you know, writing, you know, just writing, you know, just treatments. I mean, whatever it is, always do it. And it's just like a film critic. If you want to be a film critic, great. You got to write every week if you want anybody to notice what you're doing. So you have to. That I've been writing nearly every week for over five years.
Where do we find your writing?
You can find it at rltierryrealview.com. And then I always post, you know, links to it on Twitter, rltierry1 on Twitter.
Yeah, we'll put a link on our website for this show in our show notes.
Well, thank you. I appreciate cool. that. I'm sorry to keep rambling on. My students know I tend to bloviate. So,
well, we'll let you get into the horror stuff okay. with Midsommar later. But let's see. Jimmy, how was your week?
Well, can I back up 1 second though?
Oh yeah.
Ryan, can you give us a brief definition, which I don't think we've ever actually covered? What is an American horror film?
Oh, sure. It's not to oversimplify it or anything, but they're horror films which are, you know, written and directed, you know, either in America or by Americans. That's oversimplifying it.
So it's not a certain style.
There is, and so that style comes from it's a combination of the following. It's a combination of German Expressionism, French Surrealism, Freud, and Poe. So if you take all of those elements together, you get the American horror film. And so, but all those elements weren't really put together until film was being made in America. So when I said it's films made in America, it's not to define a word with a word, but you know, they weren't combined until American filmmakers. I mean, we took German Expressionism out of Germany. We took French Surrealism out of France. And then Freud, you know, was Austrian, and Poe is American. So you take all those together, and it's what gives the American horror film its unique look and feel and tone. And I'm not an expert in Asian horror, so that's why when I do talk about horror, it's not to sound pretentious, but I say American horror film because I'm not knowledgeable in foreign horror by and large, except for, you know, Let the Right One In and a few others, which have just become part of, like, the movies that we watch, Death Snow, I think, was the other one. So I feel it's the most powerful and has been the most diverse out of a lot of the other horror that's out there. You know, and of course, there may be somebody listening who's like, oh, I don't like American horror films. I prefer Asian horror. You know, that's great. You know, that's not an area of expertise of mine. You know, this is my area of expertise. Right. And I channel my passion for horror in a great many ways as a hobby. I figure skate, and so that was also part of my week this week was figure skating, and that's what I'm doing first thing in the morning. So I took the liberty in writing a Halloween figure skating show that I sent to Busch Gardens, who's the only theme park in the country who has a daily operating figure skating show, but they don't have a Halloween show. So I'm friends with their vice president of entertainment, and I said, hey, wouldn't it be great if you had a Halloween themed figure skating show at, you know, during Hollow Scream. And it's like, cause no one else has it. So I wrote a script for a show, and I might not be able to turn triple axles yet, but I knew enough to put a script together. My coach is actually one of their lead skaters. So I have a nice, you know, it's fun to have a connection there. You know, it's just, I love it that much that I not only want to talk about it, I really do want to use it and integrate it not only into, you know, what I'm teaching, but also in my, you know, my professional work on the side. Yeah.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if we can top that for our weeks, but we'll do our best. So, Clarissa, do you have something that was exciting that happened this week?
Well, this week I figured out, because of a lap, I rode enough miles to cross Alaska through bike commuting. So I was very excited in the last 6 months.
See, I'm not the only bike nerd on this show here.
No, no.
My wife is too.
Yeah, we definitely, that's right. I ride every day, rain, shine.
So this week, Clarissa throws open the drapes to my little boy's room, you know, my 4-year-old's room.
Oh, yeah.
And there's blood on the window. And they're like, oh my God, there's blood on the window. So they look out the window and there's a hawk with a dove in its talons that hit the window.
Oh.
I know. It was so sad.
Both dead on the ground, right?
Yeah. So Clarissa was like beside herself.
Is your
upset.
Son Damien? Because I seem to recall a very similar scene in a movie.
No,
his name is Michael. But...
No, his name is Mikey. And
so we get home after, you know, I pick him up from, you know, from school and everything. We come home and they both see, because I said I would clean it up when I got home. So they both rush over to where these birds are on the ground. And I'm like, don't touch them. We got to clean them up and, you know, all this stuff. So they're looking at him. And my youngest one says, he says, Daddy, will you clean the blood off the window? I just don't want my mother to see that. And then the older boy, who's 6, he has his hands in his pocket and he looks at him and he goes, well, that's nature for you. So that was our week. A hawk catches, because the birds were, the dove was still in the hawk's talon.
Wow.
No, it's a great picture you got of it on the ground.
Yeah. The hawk catches the dove right before impact, which causes the head injury into the window. But, oh man, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was sad.
Did you take a picture? If you did.
Oh, of course. Yeah. It's on Instagram.
Okay, good. Because no picture didn't happen.
Yeah, it's on Instagram. I took more than one for sure.
It was on Instagram. I saw it and I said, is this going to be in the podcast?
So. All right, Ted, you're last, but not least.
All right, I'm last. So last weekend we went to, my son Bryce takes guitar lessons, and it's called Guitar Ninjas in Burbank. And Jason, the guy who runs it, had a special guest. So we had Nomad, who's the professional guitarist, like a studio sessions guy. He was a guitarist for Babyface. He worked with a lot of big acts, but now Nomad and Lola is his wife, and they are together, and he basically gave a class, and it was really awesome to hear him jam out to, you know, Van Halen and do all the stuff, and, you know, just kind of show the kids.
Wait, this is Bryce who's jamming out to Van Halen?
Oh, we all were. Everyone in the whole
okay
school was jamming out, but Nomad was the one making the riffs, you know.
So he was playing
it, and then Bryce and everybody was enjoying it. So that was an awesome experience. He also has a podcast, so we'll check him out. But that was a cool weekend, and then I watched a lot of shows, but we'll get into that at the end. We'll kind of wrap the show with what we're watching. What else? It was, oh, and then we got this new service. I know, Jimmy, you and I talked about Bitcoin a little bit, and I still don't exactly understand what Bitcoin is, but there's a new thing called Podcoin. I don't know if you've heard of it. Have you heard of it, Ryan?
I mean, only the stories that I get on NPR occasionally. As best as I understand it, you know, it's an online currency that trades similarly to how you would visit, you know, any, you know, foreign currency exchange kiosk or office. but it only it only exists online, and it's supposed to be much more secure than your you know, personal checking or savings account. And but I think the disadvantage to it is not that many online retailers, at least any of the online retailers I visit, which is, I mean, mostly Amazon, eBay a little bit. I mean, I don't think a lot of the bigger ones, you know, are accepting it yet. So I haven't, you know, really looked into it that much because it's not, it doesn't seem very viable, you know, for me, even though I think you can withdraw it and exchange it, but there's, you know, they have to make money. It's a business. So there's probably, I mean, there's probably a loss there. So right now it doesn't appear to be very practical. I mean, I think it's going to be a little while before we reach the current C-less Star Trek TNG universe. But then somebody always has money because the Ferengi are always wanting money. So I'm like, somebody has money. And like Picard, you talk about, like, you know, like money, like, it's like, do you need, you know, and so like, I'm not quite under, I don't, it's like you have money when you need it, but you don't actually exchange anything with money. That's one of the flaws in the Star Trek logic.
Complete barter system. I know.
Yeah. Right. Well, there's this, there's a new app. It's called Podcoin.
Oh.
And it actually monetizes podcast listeners. So if you listen to podcasts, you can earn Podcoins, and the Podcoins you can trade in for Starbucks cards, Amazon gift cards.
No way. I listen to pods. I have a 45, 50 minute commute to work. So I'm listening to pods to work, from work, all day long at work, unless I'm, you know, having to listen to audio. And so I could have a shit ton of money right now.
You could be like a millionaire Podcoin guy.
So Ryan, if you use the code TJPPOD, TJPPOD, when you log into podcoin.com, you can sign up and you get extra 300 bonus points for that.
Oh my gosh. 300. That's probably almost a cup of coffee. So...
Yeah, I was about to say, like, what does that get me? I don't know, but I'll do it. You know, why not? All right, Ryan. So Game of Thrones, you've seen the trailer, I'm assuming, more than once.
Oh, yes. Only a half a dozen or so times.
Okay. What's your first impression?
I love it. And here's why.
Can I stop you really quick?
Yes.
Ted. Hold on for the ride. I don't know if you're going to have much input, but you know, when it rears its head, jump in.
Let me just say before you guys get rolling, and I watched this multiple times this week.
Okay.
You know, okay. I was trying to get into it, and I was like watching it, and then I watched it right before we recorded tonight, and I still was just as lost as the first time I saw it. So I'm so glad the three of you guys are here, because I'm just gonna like sit back, enjoy my beer, and listen to you guys, you know, enjoy this.
Well, you're doing your Tyrion impression. Okay. I like it.
Okay, first impression, go for it.
Yes, what I loved about this trailer is it got right what so many trailers recently have gotten wrong. And it gets back to what Hitchcock said in an interview speaking on suspense when he was referring to his bomb theory, never let the bomb go off. And the Game of Thrones trailer did not do that. And so many other trailers let the bombs go off all the time. And that's a whole episode in and of itself right there. I mean, the short answer is a lot of times it's marketing companies that are cutting the trailers together, not the studio themselves, and so they see everything differently, and so they see all the flashy moments, the jump scare moments, you know, all the moments. They like, oh, we got to get that in the trailer so we can get people to go see the movie. So I can, you know, working in marketing, I can understand that. But in terms of, you know, you do take away from the film. Yeah, you have a trailer which might function like a mini movie. I mean, because making a trailer is an art form, but you're removing some of the magic away from the cinematic experience. But I mean, not to get off on a tangent, but the Game of Thrones trailer did not let the bomb go off. It didn't give too much away. It gave me, as the fan and as somebody who's, you know, watched every season, it gave me just enough to intrigue me. All the conspiracy, you know, theories that are out there, all the hypotheses for this, that, and the other, none of them were answered, and I think that's great. We don't even see Ice Dragon, and so I love it. You know, we don't see Night King. We don't obviously Ice Dragon. We don't need to need to see any of those. We got to see the characters that we care most about. We get a little bit more of Arya than the other characters, but we it's more just looking at their reactions and it's all pointing towards this ultimate enemy that is approaching, which for all intents and purposes at this point is unstoppable. And my level of suspense is still held high because it's wound up and it hasn't delivered, and so it's got my suspense held high until April 14th, when the HBO Go app is probably going to crash because everybody's going to be watching it at the same time. And it's
so excited.
I'm just very excited.
So excited.
And it's, I love that it didn't really give me anything. Some might criticize it for not doing that, but as a fan, I love it because I don't want to know. I don't want anything spoiled. I wanted just to see my characters again. And there was not very much score. It was very subtle. So the focus is on the characters. And, although there's sex and violence in Game of Thrones, the focus has never really been taken off the characters. And so it's very much a character-driven show because the amount of time that we spend with characters and dialogue vastly outweighs the amount of time that we're in bed with them or on the battlefield with them. And so I feel the trailer...
Yeah, 'tis true.
Mimicked that. And so it keeps the focus on these characters that we've grown to love or love to hate over the last 8 years. And I'm Team Dany, so I'm hoping she sits on the Iron Throne. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, okay, so...
Yes.
I have to ask... As Game of Thrones, did you read the books?
I did not read the books. I'm so sorry.
Oh. Clarissa's the only one.
Well, she read all the books. I read the first book and then the rest of it. Well, and then Ted hasn't seen anything or read anything.
Yeah, so. I read them in a summer.
Oh.
So, Ryan, they do imply the Night King, though, when you see the horse come to the battlefield at the end.
Yes.
So, I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily that they're not showing him.
That's a fair point.
Well, and then they only show the two dragons, too.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point, yeah.
And I have to agree with you that the complaint that I had was they didn't show enough.
Oh.
However, the complaint isn't a complaint necessarily that they didn't show enough. I think it's just my yearning for them to show more.
Yeah.
So when it's over, you're just so hungry for more.
Because it's been so long.
Oh, it's been 2 years. You're just like...
it's practically 2 years. July would have been two solid years. So we're 1 year and 10 months. It's crazy. 1 year, 9 months. It's so long.
But that's the ending to the beginning, right?
Yeah.
So the beginning to the beginning has been 2 years.
It's true. Yes.
Yeah. If you think of it that way, right?
Yeah.
But I think the thing is, though, like I said, the complaint really isn't a complaint. It's more that, I'm just so hungry for more that they left me desiring so much. But I think that's the whole point is that's the reason for a trailer, right? Is to get you to want, to just want more.
I liken a trailer to a couple of analogies I like to use. One, we can, for those listeners who just may be casual film fans, this analogy might ring a little bit more relevant. A trailer is like a telephone interview for a job. And I liken it to that because the goal of the phone interview is not to get the job. If you get a job as a result of a phone interview, it's probably not a job that you want. The goal of the phone interview is to get the face-to-face interview. And I learned that the hard way. I used to go into phone interviews thinking I was going to land the job. And of course, I didn't get a job offer. So it took me a long time to realize, no, the goal of this is to get the face-to-face interview. The goal of the face-to-face interview, that's to get the job. So that might help listeners to understand what I feel the purpose of a trailer is and what many agree it is. For those that are cinephiles, those who love, film, I would liken linking it to a treatment or a synopsis, because the goal of the treatment or the synopsis is to get the actor or director, producer to want to see the script. That synopsis or treatment's not going to, unless you're, you know, unless it's, you know, a commission job or you've been, you know, contracted to do it, that's not going to, you know, that's not going to sell the movie. The goal of the synopsis or the treatment is to get them to read the script. So it's like, hey, this is a great idea. Now let me see the script. And so that's what the trailer is. It's like, here's, you know, the synopsis or the treatment. And we're then kind of in the same, you know, the kind of the position as that, you know, actor, director, producer. It's like, I want to see the movie now. What I don't want to watch the trailer and be like, oh, okay, I've seen the movie. No, you know, I want, the trailer needs to leave me with, I want to see more. So those are two analogies that I like to use when speaking about what I feel the purpose of a well-written trailer is.
So why are you so in favor of Daenerys? I'm just curious.
I love her because of all the characters that we have. Well, first I was a team Ser Loris Tyrell, but we all know what happened there. But boy, it was like, whew.
Ted doesn't. I don't know what happened.
I need like ice cubes. I need like run ice cubes down me every time he was on screen. But what I love about her is that her goal is clearly to reclaim the throne. It's very, very clear. But she treats people very fairly along the way. And that's not to say that she's weak. You know, we've certainly seen...
I'm sorry to interrupt you guys. Which one is she? Is she Dark Phoenix or is she Sarah Connors?
Oh, she's Sarah... well, the bad Sarah Connors. Yeah. And she unfortunately, and then she was also okay. In Solo. I'm really hoping that Amelia Clarke will Judge be able Dredd. To transition out of this series, because the two characters she's done so far, she will do it. I'm confident. She's just so Danny is her world. So soon as this is over,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Just we can't have crappy Terminator movies anymore. So.
Ted, to answer your question, though, she's the platinum blonde woman who, like, can't be burned by dragon fire.
She's the mother of dragons.
Okay, cool.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think the one you're thinking of is the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which is Cersei.
Oh, that's, the older Sarah Connors.
Oh, the older Sarah, Lena Hadley.
Yes, you're correct. There are two Sarah Connors in Game of Thrones.
Oh my gosh, I just realized that. Whoa!
So did I. I didn't realize that either.
Oh man, I had no. Where's Arnold? That's, I mean, amazing. Arnold has got to be showing up at this point because he said he'd be back. So
I think he will be in this episode.
He's the ice dragon because he's Mr. Freeze.
That's right. It's all coming together. But I guess, you know, the short answer is she's strong, she's fair, she's the definition of nobility, and I don't mean just by birth. She, you know, acts like she's a noble. It's just like people. You can have all the money in the world and be completely classless. You can be completely broke and still have a high degree of class. And so she's very classy, and she, above all, you know, wants peace. But she knows that, you know, sometimes you have to go to war to achieve peace. And so she's realized that, but she's never forgotten the people that have made her the person that she is. And she's shown us time and time again that, you know, she will let you know she is queen, but she's still willing to those who respectfully offer their opinions and ask if they may share their opinion, that she does listen to them. And so she's that's why I like her so much and feel that she would be the best ruler that Westeros could ask for.
And Clarissa, what do you think is with Cersei's smirk in this trailer?
Oh, well, I know that we talked about it briefly, but I still think it's, I don't think she was ever fully accepting of the undead. Like, she's like, that's all, you know. So I think she's just in denial of it. So like that smirk is like, oh, all those crazy people, they're just going for the people, the undead, or going to that war. So because of that, I'm going to come up behind them and take them out. That's what her thing is. She's thinking she's going to take it all because they're all focusing towards the north instead of the south.
Oh, so she thinks that
she's
the undead is a false?
Like a farce. And that she's going to take over because everybody else is focusing on them.
See, I was thinking that she might be looking at it in the sense of let the undead take out the north. And then she'll make a deal with the Night King. She rules King's Landing. He gets the rest of it, and that's the end of it.
I don't know if she can.
But I don't know if the Night King is like
a negotiator.
Yeah, or diplomatic.
I doubt that.
No, I am afraid his skills at diplomacy are deplorable. Oh, the very first thing I thought when I saw it was that she realized she was wrong. But it's that moment when you realize you are wrong and you have no choice but to laugh at yourself, be like, I screwed up. And it's one of those perhaps maybe self-deprecating humor moments. And so I interpret it as she realized that the threat is real and she was making light of it. And it was a smirk or a slight laugh really at herself is almost that, you know, because she doesn't think she can be outsmarted and that, you know, she has been outsmarted. Another theory that I saw floating around in the Twitter sphere was that she received news that Danny had been killed and that was the reason for the smirk.
Okay.
And then I think another theory I saw was that that she heard about the dragon and how now, you know, Danny only has two dragons instead of the three. And so those are a couple of the different ones, but the first one is the one I think, and then the other two are ones that I've come across, you know, since Tuesday, I guess the trailer came out.
Well, I think the North won, but, you know, it was against the South, and the way that the reconciliation happened between the Union and Dixie was a little, you know, was never really fully taken care of. So I don't know.
Oh, that makes King's Landing Tara, and she's Scarlett O'Hara.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Union and Dixie. Makes perfect sense.
Well, I have a question for Ryan. If you say that this one didn't give anything away, hopefully you saw the supercut from HBO that came out last week. That was everything in 2019, summer 2019, and it showed the walls coming down or the wall coming down.
That was the end of season seven. Well, we hadn't seen the wall completely come down, but it was like, shit, the wall is coming down. So it was, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, the section closest to the sea, I think, is the section that came down. So what my hypothesis is that the entire wall is not going to come down, but enough of it is going to come down to where the Night Walkers can walk around it instead of having to go completely through it. Because I think it's that section by the sea, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was. You're right. And Ryan, are you typically an HBO subscriber or do you subscribe just for the show?
No, I subscribe only for the show. So I don't get to watch Westworld. I don't get to watch any of the other shows because I quite literally subscribe the weekend that it's coming out. And then I let it expire after the show is over because I have other subscription services, especially now that I got Shudder, because you can get it as part of Amazon Prime for, I think it's like an additional $4 or $5. So it's like I got enough, you know, streaming services. So, but I subscribe for the moment, and I do it legitimately. When I was still in school. I did keep coming up with fake email addresses, but as soon as I graduated, I was making it right by actually signing up and paying during the show.
Adulting sucks. Let me just tell you that.
So let's say 8 weeks that you're going to subscribe. Will you binge like Westworld or, you know, what's the other Barry and
something else? Barry, do Barry. Barry's a quick read.
And Silicon Valley. And will you binge those shows within that 8-week time frame? Or will you just do Game of Thrones and drive on?
In the past, I've just done Game of Thrones. I have heard so many great things about Westworld, though, that perhaps I will take advantage of the time and watch them. Yeah, I'm more of a you know, movie than TV person. So I don't probably watch as many TV shows as maybe some would think, you know, as much as I, you know, just, you know, love, you know, TV and movies. It's I spend more of my time watching movies. So I think what I've done.
But I think Game of Thrones is very cinematic. I think, you know.
Oh, it is. It's every episode. It's with the exception of and sometimes a cliffhanger at the end. Every episode is a complete story, and it's told in a 3-act structure. Whereas some TV dramas go the 7-act route because maybe they were planning on commercials and they didn't have them, or it was actually a TV movie that did have TV drama that did have those commercial breaks. And so even streaming shows, some of them are still going by the 5-7-act structure, but I feel that Game of Thrones is very, very much sticking to the 3-act, and that that pacing contributes to how and why it feels so cinematic. It's not just because it has a cinematic color palette. It is in the writing, and the show has had fantastic writing ever since day one, and I love how it's evolved over time. And it's a show that has there's so much there. There's something for everybody. And the show had more sex and violence in the first couple of seasons, and some people didn't really like that because they felt it was exploitive. But what? The film and TV is a business, and that is a great way to get people hooked into your show. And it works. It's quite penetrative. And so it hooked me. I mean, the first moment I saw Sir Loras Tyrell, I'm like, you are mine. And so, but then that hung young stable boy had to betray him. And I was just so mad at him. The writing, it's just been on point. And I think the reason for that, beyond structure the plot, is the I feel like the characters are thought of first. We developed our characters first. We wrote out solid characters, and then we developed the conflict between them, and we allowed the conflict to give us the drama, or occasionally the comedy as well. And it's just been something I've found very remarkable for all 8 seasons, and it's never let me down. Maybe the run times, like the one, was it last season or the season before, where there's that run time of like 41 minutes. I was kind of upset with that, but overall it's been great. And I think it's a show that you don't have to be one of those regular attendees at Ren Faire or other medieval festivals to enjoy it. Maybe it helps. I mean, I was at Ren Faire a couple of weeks ago, and I did sit on a replica of the Iron Throne, and so I got my moment.
I was going to ask about that. You're going to be on our cover art, right?
Oh, I love that idea.
I made a GIF of all the people sitting on the thrones, and you're at the end of that GIF. And then when I sent that around to you guys, I was showing you guys the GIF. And then I actually wrote in the email, I said, watch it till the end. And I thought, oh my God, I can't say watch it till the end. What I said,
you're like the nun.
It's like the nun. It's like the worst part about the nun trailer is to say to somebody, watch it till the end. So if you haven't watched it to the end yet, watch it to the end.
No.
Yes, I'm saying it. I'm breaking my own rule.
I must not have watched it till the end. I am so sorry. I feel so guilty. I will go back and watch it till the end.
It loops.
It is fantastic, Ryan.
I watched it to the end because I just wanted to see everybody who was on the throne. And then I see like this guy on a throne at the beach come across. So I tell Ted, I go, is that Ryan? It was pretty funny. Yeah. It was pretty funny.
It's pretty good, Ted.
No, I said to Ryan, I said, Ryan, we have a Game of Thrones episode coming up. I know nothing about this. So I DM on Twitter and I'm like, are you, I think I heard you talk about Game of Thrones in some of our Twitter conversations. And he sends me that picture.
That's so right. You messaged me. I think I was at Ren Faire and I had just, I think I was just there. So, that's right. Yeah. It was so much fun. I mean, yeah, it's made out of, you know, like 2x4s and it's painted and stuff, but you know what? It looked almost right. And it just was fun. I love sitting in it.
Hey, don't give away any secrets. It looks real to me. It looks real to me.
Oh,
you know, hey, before we just like continue going on Game of Thrones for the forever. Rest of the night, let's do a couple other trailers and then we'll talk about what we're watching and move out of here. So what do you say?
Awesome.
Yeah, because I could definitely keep going. I know Clarissa probably can, and Ryan, yes. And Ted's like rolling his eyes.
And Ted finished his beer, so I could probably fall asleep right about now. Well, let's talk about Ryan's second love, which is, well, first love, which is horror movies, because Midsommar, or is that the full name of this? Yeah, Midsommar.
Midsommar, yeah.
It looks amazing, and I think this is one of our favorite production companies, A24.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it came out again with another, it did a little preamble before the trailer came out. It gave you a little anticipation. It gave these great, like, Mayday kind of still images of beautiful children around, like, a maypole, kind of this circular motion, this very autumnal, or not autumnal, this very spring festival kind of feel. And then it said a trailer's coming, and it's by the director of Hereditary. So, and I loved Hereditary, and I thought it was totally like dogged by the Academy for not getting any nominations.
Oh, yeah.
But this one really feels like it's going to pick up where Hereditary left off, and it's kind of that end scene in Hereditary kind of left a lot of my horror friends kind of wanting for more, and it really left a bad taste in their mouth. As far as when they watched Hereditary as a horror film, they thought it was a cop-out to end the way that it did, and since I'm not a big horror fanatic, I was kind of into the craft of the filmmaking that Hereditary was, so the fact that it was a cop-out in a horror sense didn't bother me, but this one feels like it's, you know, Eli Roth's Green Inferno, it's like a little fire festival, you know what I mean? It has something for everybody, and it's a horror movie, maybe a little Serpent in the Rainbow, because you're in this POV, who's somebody who's like paralyzed, and you're getting talked to and you're getting explained to what's going to happen to you. And then I only saw a few scenes of Mother, but after seeing a few scenes, the climactic scenes of Mother, I know that's one Darren Aronofsky movie I'm never going to see the whole thing of having children. So that this hits me on so many levels that I don't know if I'm going to be able to stomach seeing it, but I loved Hereditary so much that I want to see this movie. Where do you sit with this, Ryan?
I love the trailer. I didn't watch the teaser one that you spoke of. I watched the one, the most recent one, which was 2 weeks ago or whenever it dropped.
Yeah.
And I instantly thought that this is a great companion piece to Hereditary. I was speaking with a friend of mine earlier today who he manages an AMC theater in North Carolina. So we love talking movies together. And so we were talking about the trailer, and we both felt very much the same way, that it is it's as if we're Alice and we've stepped through the looking glass. And so everything in this Midsommar world is it's completely opposite. It's the antithesis of Hereditary, even the color palette. I imagine if we were to look at a color palette, the opposite colors are going to be the ones that we now see in the Midsommar trailer. And we have everything is bright and cheerful, but
it's almost too bright.
It's still unsettling all at the same time. Now, I think we can attribute part of that to the score, because the score is a bit unsettling for it. But then we do also have those uncomfortable POV moments. You said I thought lot, you know, of Jodie Foster and, you know, Anthony Hopkins. And so I almost feel like we have a mm-hmm. Hannibal Lecter moment there with the lady wearing the flowers. And and so, but it was still, it's just, she's like too nice. And so everybody's really nice and really cheerful, whereas in Hereditary, it's dark and dismal.
A little creepy.
The color palette is dark. The people are dark. Everything is very dark. And this, it's bright. But it's too good to be true. And that's what leaves me with the feeling that, you know, this is going to be, there's something ominous here. But I haven't decided for myself whether it's going to be, you know, a hard psychological horror, or if it's actually going to be a satire. Because I could see it going the satirical route.
Mm.
And I think it would work either way, especially because Hereditary was a hard psychological horror film. With the supernatural elements. At the end of the day, it's a heavy family drama, but we have, you know, sufficient horror, you know, elements in it.
Right.
And I think this one might go the opposite. You know, maybe we're going to get a New Nightmare or a Scream, where we're going to be horror, but we're going to go, kind of poke holes in it and just to really play around with all of these opposites. And so I really hope that this truly is a complimentary movie. We got bookends, and so we've got Hereditary on one side and we've got Midsommar on the other, and so that's what I think from the trailer. But I also like that it doesn't give me too much. It gives me just enough to intrigue me, and it does that, and I'm super, you know, stoked to, you know, watch it this summer.
Yeah, it almost gave me like a Witness meets the Ring movie or something.
Ooh,
like that, you know?
Okay.
You know, Amish supernatural or something.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah, except ice. But then there's the guts in the near the end of it.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
And I think you're right about the brightness of the color palette, mm-hmm. in that the brightness, it sets you up like it, you keep wanting your brain to say, this is happy. This is a happy place. But yet it keeps coming back to, this is a miserable place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be a cultist.
Yeah, it's just too happy. It makes it a little creepy.
Yeah. Anytime a tradition or a ceremony can only take place every 90 years, run. I mean, that is not a good sign. That is not a good sign.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. What I was thinking
and
is...
And if you're the only black dude amongst them... Run too.
What I was thinking is, it's a 9-day festival every 90 years, right? Burning Man happens every year. There's like thousands, tens of thousands of people. This thing is like, you know, once in a lifetime event. And there's like a couple of...
Yeah.
Unless you're Betty White, then you might get to experience it twice.
That's true, yeah. But there's a handful of cultists,
yes,
at this event, right? What am I missing? Like, how do you like have this once in a lifetime event and no one is there? Like, you'd think there'd be thousands of people wanting to go.
Yeah,
it's exclusive. You had to get it was a hard mailed invitation, and so you had to show up with the handwritten copy.
Like I said, it's like the Fyre Festival. It was $30,000 a ticket. So.
That's what I was, yeah.
The Fyre Festival.
Yeah, and when are we going to learn that, like, cultists, you know, the Branch Davidians and all this stuff? I mean, like, just don't go there.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the thing. You got it because there was all those, like, the drawings or whatever. There's, like, a few different scenes. And then there was the one that actually had, like, the tree looking thing, but it was the T with the circles on it. To me, it looked like one of those trees where you hang people.
We're playing around with circles a lot. We have the laurel wreaths around the head. We're walking in circles around. It looked like a maypole and
the kids walking. Yeah,
I know.
And so there's lots of circles. And I like how you pointed that out, Clarissa, because I think we might see a motif of circles.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
These circles could be a motif of different kinds, yeah, of eyes, like in Psycho. You know, we have the bird's eye view of Phoenix. We have the eyes from the police officer. Mother's eyes always watching. And so the drain that the water goes down is a circle. Her eyes a circle. So we're playing around with the idea of eyes, and we're telling that through circles. So perhaps, you know, Midsommar is taking it was going that direction, which we're gonna see, you know, circles represent something. So I think it's a great observation that you pointed out.
I love that this is Ari's, you know, sophomore effort, and it feels as amazing as Hereditary. You know, it feels like he spent as much time on this as he did on, you know, the first movie, and it's a upping of his game. I don't want to call him Hitchcock. You know, I think I went far to call Jordan Peele, you know, Quentin Tarantino in his heyday kind of thing. So, but I do love Ari and what he's done with a couple of movies, you know?
So Ryan, I think what you're saying about the eyes with the Hitchcock things and Clarissa talking about the circles, and then the trailer ends with the girl looking through the keyhole in the door.
Yes.
With that like bizarre reflection that, you know, I paused it and I kind of I forwarded the frame slightly to see if anything were to change. You can't see what that reflection is in her eye. Speculating what might that come about, like maybe the answers to what this whole festival is about or something, or like that's kind of the core of why everyone's there to begin with, or what are your thoughts?
Well, I think it could be two things. One, she could be witnessing a sacrifice or a slaughter of some kind, because we do have a lot of audible noises, but we're not quite, you know, we hear lots of commotion, but we don't, we don't have enough context to know, well, what the commotion is. And so I think on one hand, it could be witnessing a very violent scene. But on the other hand, I think she could be witnessing something very hypersexual, because, in French, the French call an orgasm the little death. So what she could be watching is something that, again, is hypersexual, but then might turn into something, you know, very violent, because after all, you know, listening, to moans and screams, you close your eyes, and it's like sometimes it is hard to know whether or not somebody's being stabbed to death, or they're having the time of their life.
In the throes.
So I think it could be one of those two things. And I too looked in the reflection in her eye, because I noticed that we have the reflection. So I paused it, and I could not, it's just...
And so bright, too.
I couldn't make out anything, so I'm at a loss. But just going off of the rest of the context of the trailer, if it is a cult, I mean, it looks like one, but, you know, perhaps it's a fertility cult. And so then she's watching, something, you know, disturbing, you know, happen on the other side. And that might also explain the heavy breathing, because we have the... So we have that heavy breathing through the trailer as well.
Wait, yeah, there's a very rhythmic pace to this.
Yes.
Both this trailer and the Game of Thrones trailer have a sound design that bridges into a musical space.
Yes.
Without having actual music to it, which is a great thing I think trailers do. And whether you're going to use music to carry a story through a trailer and kind of make it lyrical, as far as, you know that the piece is going to be short enough to give yourself up to like a song kind of pacing. But both of these do it without actual songs throughout, which is an interesting way to go. And what I actually saw in the lens flare that is the reflection in her eye is a little bit of the A24 logo. And I know they didn't do it, but because you can't actually make anything out in it, it really kind of, it harkened back to that lens flare that A24 does in the beginning of their logo reveal.
What do you say we guys move on and we drive on to Formula One? Drive to Survive.
All right. So for Formula One, I know every week we kind of do something Netflix, because Netflix has so much content coming out. But I'll give you a little preview to what I was watching this week, because it's definitely a reason that Formula One made it into this episode. I saw Rush for the first time this week, and I don't know if either of you guys have seen Rush, but it's a 2013 movie. With Chris Hemsworth, and Chris Hemsworth is playing a Formula One racer.
Yeah, I have not seen Rush. You know, and the thing about the Formula One Drive to Survive on Netflix, like, I'm not a race car guy, you know, I'm not into NASCAR or any of this stuff. So, like, I know nothing about Formula One. Other than, like, I'd say the only thing I know about Formula One is that it's like European racing. as opposed to like go fast and turn left, which is American racing.
NASCAR.
Right. And in Tampa, is there a track by you guys or... I think there is.
Actually, yeah, there is a... St. Petersburg has a big Grand Prix every year. In fact, was it this week or is it next week?
Oh, I'm thinking of Daytona. Never mind.
It's a Formula One Grand Prix. And there's also one down in Sebring where my grandma has her winter place. And so she's not terribly far from the Sebring track. And so there's a Formula One, and I see the Porsche and Ferrari and all like the, you know, the European cars, you know, all the signs are up, you know, when they're in town. And so I can hear the race actually from where she lives because it's so incredibly loud.
Wow.
Pretty sure I played a Formula One racing game on my N64. So, I mean, I know, I guess I have that experience, but yeah.
So you're the resident expert is what you're saying, or
only if I'm the driver. Only if I'm the driver.
Got ya.
It's so funny because I looked up Rush, and Rush is a sports rivalry story between James Hunt and Niki Lauda, and it's so funny because, like I said, Chris Helmsworth plays James Hunt, but Niki Lauda is played by Daniel Brühl. Is that the right name? Way do you say it? He's the Age of Ultron. Villain. I want to say Age of Ultron villain. He's one of the villains in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Oh no, he's a Civil War villain, because in Civil War, Thor isn't there. So actually, the villain in Civil War actually gets to battle with Thor in another, you know, universe, which is this, you know, this Formula One racing movie. And it's amazing that people haven't seen this movie. It is a phenomenal movie, Rush. So I fully endorse it. I gave it like 4.5 stars on Letterboxd.
Oh, check it out. Check it out.
I think that the marketing for it kind of fell on its face because I think because you said Formula One's not an American thing, this movie was directed by Ron Howard. I heard when it came out, but it wasn't sold properly to the American audience. I think, you know, just by saying, you know, you think you're going to say Formula One racing, you were directed by Ron Howard, and that's all you have to say.
Like you're in Monaco or something.
Right, but it's all over Europe, and it didn't play. But the way that Ron Howard puts this together is phenomenal. So I think everybody should go see Rush. And now for the Formula One Drive to Survive, it has a lot of those themes. So it's kind of it feels like a documentary that carries on in the Rush tradition.
Yeah, yeah.
Where these guys are basically fighting for their lives. This Niki Lauda was almost burned to death. And he fought back in the middle of a season while he was recovering from skin grafting and lung pumping. And he was watching his main opponent, James Hunt, win race after race and gain on him. And basically at the end of the movie, he says, like, you made me heal faster because I need to get back on the racetrack to beat you. So I think it's just a phenomenal disposition that these Formula One racers have, that they would rather... And the trailer captures it for Formula One. They don't care about life or death in the moments of their racing. And to me, that's a thing that was captured by this, you know, cinematic film or the cinematic scripted film. And it also feels like if that's something you could capture as a documentary, then that's an amazing feat.
So one who is ignorant on Formula One, as I am, and watching the trailer... And they have throughout the trailer, they have the countdown beat of the red dots, right, on the lamp. Mm-hmm. As it's counting down, it's building that suspense. So you're like, well, what happens at the end of the countdown, you know? And it's like kind of building that. Somebody who is like really into Formula One, who already knows what's going to happen at the end of the countdown, does that countdown work for like everybody? Or is it, do you think they're targeting an audience who really isn't a Formula One, you know, fan, or somebody who doesn't really understand like what's going on in the trailer? Like, they want to capture those like people who are just ignorant of what Formula One has and what it has to offer.
They show you the whole rack of the red lights.
Yeah.
So even if you don't know how long it's going to be, by the second light, you know, okay, there's five of them or six of them, and you're going to see them all light up, and then you're going to see them.
But there's the whole top row too, though, that doesn't light up.
Yeah, but you're going to see them take off. And I think when they show the cacophony of crashes after that,
right,
it's like, it is still to this day a deadly sport. And I think that's the thing that drives people to see it and to watch it and to compete in it.
Yeah. I mean, you watch car racing for the crashes, right?
Exactly. I think the tension worked very well for me.
Yeah. The anticipation.
Because much like you, Jim, I'm other than being just maybe just a little familiar with it because it does come to my area. I'm still largely unfamiliar with how everything works. So I didn't, I imagine that the lights, I was surprised they weren't green because I'm like, well, doesn't green mean go?
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Right?
And so, but I loved every time it was on screen. It's like, I'm cognizant of what this, the trailer editor is doing, but still it works so well. Like it's even when you know what he or she did to edit it, to drive up that tension, it still sucks you in. And that's what it did for me. Cause when you first told me Formula One racing, I was like, what? It's like, that is just completely uninteresting, but I like the other two trailers. So, okay. 2 out of 3 is not bad. So, but then when I watched it, I was like, wow, I'm still not 100% sold on it, but I'm at least intrigued. And so it was able to hook me. I liked the couple, a piece of narration that we had in it. The imagery was very violent, even though, it's not like battlefield. It's not like when you think of a conventional battlefield in a movie, violence, but it can be. What happens out there could be likened to a battlefield. And so we had that violence there, and the guys are really hot, and so that really helped too.
Well, then you should definitely see Rush, because Chris Hemsworth is amazing in that movie, and it is a full-on, full-body amazing.
I'm renting it right now.
And I like the conversation earlier about the circles, the eyes, with Hitchcock and so on. And then even going further back when talking about the Looking Glass and all of that conversation we had. And then they show, I don't even know the racer's name, but he has the helmet on, but his visor's up and he has like those ice blue eyes. And you see the intensity right before whatever's going to happen. I mean, he might still need to be in the pits for all I know. I don't know where he's at. But like that intensity, and he's just like looking like, get me back on the track. I'm hungry. I got to get out there, And and like the eyes are like just lasers piercing the track or whatever it is. I mean, it's just like brilliant.
It is just the manner in which I was being shown this story that I should watch. It worked very well because it got me to look up more information on it. I mean, which is one step closer to actually watching it. Because I'm like, I wanted to know a bit more about it. So I spent a little time on the Google to learn more about the movie. And so it was enough to get me to do that. So I think it's a very very effective trailer. I think it gives us just enough, because that is something that I think a lot of people aren't familiar with, so it has to give us something. So I think it gives us just enough to provide all the context and to establish what we're being, at least what we're being told we're going to watch, and we're shown how dangerous it is. And I think it's just like a car accident on the interstate. You've seen one, you've seen them all, but
Gaper's
still turn. Even when you say you're complaining about every driver in front of you rubbernecking, but what do? You rubberneck too.
You look over.
And so it could be that logic. I mean, the same way that we look for the crashes, on the interstate, the same reason why I'm sure, 90% of people are at NASCAR just to watch the crashes. Then maybe people will watch this just because they're going to see some serious crashes. And it looks like the way the cameras are positioned that we're going to be up close and personal with with these, and perhaps we'll understand why, you know, racing is like a drug, because it can be very addictive, much like you described, you know, the driver earlier. And one of the shows Adrenaline we produce at Feld is Supercross, and so I get information I'm on motorsports just, you know, within the company that I work for. So, and there's, you know, there is, you know, some of, I think some of the same reasons why, you know, people go to, you know, see these races are the same people that are going to see, the Supercross shows to see the, it's not as dangerous as Formula One, but it's still a very high intensity, you know, dangerous sport. And then the way the commercials are built, they're built with that in mind. And so I can see, you know, some of the logic behind, you know, how this was made, because, coworker of mine does the Supercross TV spots, and so that's some of the same logic that he uses when he puts those together.
I worked with Feld a little bit when we did the Marvel show.
Yeah, Marvel Universe Live. Yeah,
Marvel Universe Live, and I was able to swing some. It was a birthday party for Bryce a couple years ago, and we did that huge. And it's got, like you said, it's got some of that motocross action, a lot of pyrotechnics, yes. and you mix that together, and it's this controlled kind of chaos.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's in the Marvel Cinematic, you know, not the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but the Marvel Universe. It has like a nice story to it. A lot of Doctor Strange. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is definitely along those lines. And the thing that really got me about this trailer was the way it's trying to hit for everybody. You know, I was drawn in, all of us were drawn in by the action and the intensity of it. But then even if you weren't into it, if you're looking away the whole time, if you heard the mother talking about watching her son racing, that had to tug on your heartstrings in a different way.
Oh,
and you're just pulling in a completely different segment of the audience to say, like, ooh, is that something I can latch onto, and a reason that I might want to see something like this, even if it's for this morbid, you know, curiosity of like, ooh, what is that like for a mother to know that her son is doing what her husband did, you know?
And I think the bar for Netflix, like Ted and I often talk about, is so low that if this was at the theater, I don't think I would spend, you know, I'd take my family, I'd plunk down the money, I'd drive there, you know, I mean, the whole thing, you know, spend a whole night on a Saturday or whatever to go see this. But the bar is so low that, like, I could watch it anytime. I just, like, plug it in and just go, and, you know, while I'm writing reports at work or something, it's playing in the background, and I'm just kind of like, out of the corner of my eye, just watching over at it or something, you know? And
oh no, but I want to see this in your house with your surround system, because I think the audio is going to be amazing.
Oh, it'll sound good. Oh,
you got those new speakers?
Yeah. Ooh, I know, I'm coming to watch a movie.
Hey, fly into Santa Barbara, you know, I'll pick you up at the airport.
Actually, one of the schools I applied to was in Santa Barbara.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So, you never know.
I think the barrier to entry is so low for any and all things Netflix. And we were talking about this even last week, where Netflix movies come to the theater for consideration for awards and so on. But like, I mean, with it being on Netflix, how many people are in the theater?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem like many. You know what I mean?
No, it doesn't. I think this is one. I think the beauty of the Netflix platform is that you can get these movies out there, because this strikes me as a movie, as a documentary that it's just so niche that it would, I mean, yeah, it'd play for a week in LA and New York, maybe Chicago. But then, right. I mean, that would be, I mean, that would be it. And so it's just not, going to get even kind of your standard limited run in your, like, you know, 20 biggest cities. I mean, I don't even think it's yeah.
Wherever Red Bull would play it, that's what it would be.
That's true.
That is pretty much what it is. So I like the fact that the film can be made and that you can watch it. And it's, I mean, with the, you know, if you have a 65-inch TV and surround sound, you know, it's almost like being at the movie theater. You probably have a better popcorn. And the beer isn't $20 a glass.
It's more comfortable.
So,
well, it's $20 a glass, but it's good quality $20 glass beer. It's barrel aged.
So, Ryan, speaking of Netflix, what are you watching lately these days?
Oh.
Like, what's going on? What's on your television, computer, like, whatever device you use to watch stuff on?
Sure. Presently, it's not on Netflix, but I'm presently watching Riverdale. Absolutely love Riverdale on the CW. I know it's a glorified soap opera, but I absolutely love it. I was a big fan of the Vampire Diaries, and I like the originals, and so I really like Riverdale. So I'm all caught up. I watched the recent one. The tribute to Luke Perry they had was great. You know, it's just, you know, very...
Oh, I couldn't believe it. The guy passed away. Unbelievable.
Mm. Yeah, and it's, they have to write him out of the show now, which is, it's sad, because now Archie has no more dad, and there's no setup for him to go. This is going to be one of those really weird, write the guy off of the show, because it's just so unexpected. And so they did a tribute, and I thought it was in very good taste, but I really enjoy Riverdale. I recently finished watching You. Probably about 3 weeks ago, three or 4 weeks ago, I watched You. I really enjoyed You. I was very was hooked from the. I think it wasn't quite the first episode. I think it was the second episode that really got me into You. I guess it's probably not the. I don't know. Probably not the best way to put it.
I just got that.
I watch so much stuff. I sometimes forget. I forget what I watch. I know. Two Sundays ago, I rewatched the Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, nice.
Oh yeah, classic.
And it's probably the first time I rewatched it in a long time. And I have a friend of mine in Germany. We met on Instagram, and we've been actually really good friends over the last 2-3 years. And so he's a filmmaker, and he's a cinephile. And so he and I take turns watching movies every week. And so 1 week I pick, 1 week he picks. And so we concurrently watch it. So even though he's in Germany, we start the movie at the same time. So it's like we're watching it together, and then we can talk about it. And so the Fly was one that we watched two Sundays ago, and I had seen it, but it had been a really long time, and I was interested in rewatching The Fly because a podcast I listened to, I think it was Neon Brainiacs. If I had the pod wrong, I apologize to the listeners, but I think it was them, and they did an episode on The Fly. It was either them or Let's Watch Horror, and they did The Fly, and and it's like, I need to rewatch this because, you know, I know I've seen it, but, you know, it was such a long time ago. I had a much greater appreciation for it. Absolutely loved, you know, the body horror, and it was just so just twisted and disgusting. And I was like, this is so good. I can't believe it's taken me this long to rewatch it. And some more recent ones that I've watched for the first time. I watched Dark City for the first time a couple of months ago. It you know, out Matrix the Matrix, and it was 98. Matrix was whatever year it was. And so I think it did a much better job. I love the neo-noir feel to it.
It's Ebert's favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, he loved Dark City.
He did a whole audio commentary on it.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew he was quite fond of it, but I had never watched it because I was just too young when it came out. And so it's just one of those that you miss. And
so, Ryan, in your viewing with your German friend, do you guys trade off like time in the day so it's not always night or not always morning wherever you're at?
We usually watch about between 11 and 1 o'clock, depending upon our schedules, Sunday mornings or, you know, early Sunday afternoon. So
for you, which puts him in the evening then.
Right. So it's him in the evening and then me. So it's dinner time for him, lunch time for me. And that's what we do. And he's introduced me to so many movies that I hadn't seen before. You know, everything from Educating Rita to Possession to Boogie Nights. Because Boogie Nights is another one. Came out when I was, you know, super young. So
how can you not know Boogie Nights?
I've never seen Boogie Nights.
I do now. And I love that. That last scene, but I've been told it wasn't real, so but yeah, I watched, I usually when I sit down, To answer your question, what am I watching? I sit down, I go on Shudder or I go on Prime, and I'm just look for a horror movie that I haven't seen before or one I haven't seen in a really long time, and I watch it, and because that's my favorite thing. And then TV shows, Family Guy is the one I'm currently watching. Always watch Family Guy. I mentioned Riverdale already, I love sitting down and just picking out a horror movie. And the pods I listen to, if they cover movies that I haven't seen before, I put it on my list, and I go to see if I can find it, because I want to know why they liked it or didn't like it, or maybe I don't know. I'm just curious, and so I feel like I'm able to be a part of the I'm taking the conversation and bringing it into the real world.
American Psycho, thumbs up, thumbs down?
I love American Psycho. And it's a perfect mention because today is International Women's Day. And Mary Heller was the director of Psycho.
Yes.
So I think it's a fantastic one to bring up on this day in particular. But any day, I was talking with another pod wanted to know what film summed up the 2000 decade. So 2000 to 2009. It's like, what film defined the decade? And I selected American Psycho as the film that defined the decade, despite it coming out in 2000 at the start of the decade. It was my pick for the film that defined the decade because you remove the Walkman, the Huey Lewis in the News, and some other elements, and it's like this very me-centric idea rings true today, and it rings true for then, even though the movie set in the 80s, but a lot of what was happening in the 80s, I wasn't born for most of it, but it was just me, and I think we were encountering that same thing in the 2000s, except for maybe 2001, but
because the 80s is almost built the way the world is in some way now, like that started the me's and the way it is with most of society at right now.
Yeah, that's what, yes, that was, I feel it defined, until, the financial crisis at the end of the decade, but it was, I think it, that was my pick anyway. And I think it was one of the other, mentions was, Social Network was the, defined, that was 2010. So it was another one, but love American Psycho. There's a lot there. And it's one that I was one of the first films that I took an American Horror film class in graduate school. So that was one of the films that we analyzed.
Amazing. Ted, how about you? What are you guys watching at your house?
So as you know, I watch most of the stuff on my own because Anne's sleeping or not into what I'm into. But I watched Velvet Buzzsaw.
Oh, I saw Velvet Buzzsaw. Yeah.
Did you like it?
I liked it, and I came to its defense, and it was getting all this hate, and I came to its defense because...
You might have to defend it again.
If you want the full explanation, you can read article. I reviewed that one for One Movie Punch, so you don't even have to read my article. You can listen to it if you want.
So that's awesome. But I will say, so I watched it, and there are three things that I was trying to watch this week. I watched Velvet Buzzsaw, ABC Murders, because I liked the idea of Malkovich doing Perot. And then I started the Ozarks.
Oh, Ozarks, so good.
Or Ozark. And when I saw Velvet Buzzsaw, I kind of made my way through it because I love the subject matter and I like the satirical take on it. But there were definitely cinematic moments in it where I thought the cinematography on it was kind of falling very flat, and it had this very television look to it that really just took me out of the whole experience. And my joke for the whole week was that this is the movie that Spielberg saw that made him say, Netflix, why are you putting this stuff up against my movies when it lacks the cinematic gravity that my filmed movies has? And then you have something like Ozark. So you have Velvet Buzzsaw that's a movie. movie. It's a film. It's within that structure of the two-hour mm-hmm. story. And then you have Ozark, which is this dark series with these actors that are known for television and film, but they're not really, you know, they aren't, I guess they're low A-listers, you know, but they're amazing actors in their own right. But the way that it's shot,
oh, gorgeous,
is cinematic. It's like Game of Thrones. It's dark, you know, and the storylines and the depravity that they kind of just wallow in is almost like the swamps of the Everglades. It's not even Ozarks. It's like what are
you watching this on, Ted?
I'm just watching it. Oh, I watch it on. I actually watch this on the OTT. I watch it on my television.
No, I mean on Netflix. Is it Netflix?
It's a Netflix series.
Okay.
Oh, you haven't watched it, Jim? It's very good.
No,
we haven't.
I don't know about you, Ted, but I prefer the first season to the second season.
Well, see, this is so. I'm happy. What are we? I think we're in our fourth season because this means that the miracle of watching it, I can binge these four seasons. So I just started last week. So I'm halfway through the first season, and I watch it in my living room because if I watch it in my bed, I fall asleep. Because it's so dark, you know what I mean? Just the overall look of it is just completely dark. But I feel like it has a Breaking Bad vibe to it.
Yes.
Where these people are trying to break into this crime organization, but it's even darker than Breaking Bad. It doesn't have the moments of levity that Breaking Bad had. And that's the kind of thing that really, you know, when I say binge it, I mean watch one and a half episodes a night, because that's all I can, you know, muster as far as energy to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it has a strip club in it, but the strip club is like the saddest place in the whole thing.
Yeah.
So and it's like this, and would you say intense family drama? This is the most intense family drama, and you think as a father of two with a wife, and he has these things that he comes up against, and the way that he handles them is so heroic. He's like my spirit father. Like if I wanted to channel being a father, this is the way I would have to do it. You know, so I think Jimmy, you'd love it.
Yeah, we'll have to check it out. And Clarissa and I are in the middle of two series on Amazon Prime. One's on regular television or on sci-fi. What is it? The Expanse.
The Expanse. That's fantastic.
Brian, I know you were saying that you're more of a Star Trek than a Star Wars guy. I think this follows like... It's like halfway until it became Star Trek, in a sense.
Okay.
So, in other words, Star Trek, the time in its history, let's say, in human history, where Star Trek lands is where humans leave the solar system for like interstellar space or whatever, right? This is more we've now populated the solar system, and there's like turmoil between like the belters... that they call them, and the belt is where we mine everything to like build our stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Mars is like the colony that was, you could say, was the United States against Britain, right? They've found their independence, and now there's the revolution and all that stuff.
And is Matt Damon the mayor?
You know, it would be amazing if they had like a Matt Damon bust or something, or like he was like, you know, their main, yeah,
or just a statue of Matt Damon with potatoes around him or something.
Yes,
or whatever. Yeah, but yeah, so I mean, The Expanse is really cool.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like it.
And then Man in the High Castle, mm-hmm. you've probably heard of.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was so into The Man in the High Castle, the first, because this is season three, right? Or is it season two? Whatever.
It's season three.
Season three, okay. So
we're in three.
Yeah, three, and we're like three episodes into three, yeah. So it hasn't really gotten going yet.
Okay, that's kind of where I stopped. I completely binged the first two seasons. I was very much into the story,
okay.
And I was so excited when, you know, Man in the High Castle started, but it was started during all the horror, and so I couldn't watch it then, so I had to wait, and then I got into all my Christmas movies, so I didn't really get around to watching it until... until January after Halloween and after Christmas. And so then I could get to watching, because Halloween was all Halloween movies. And then at Christmas time was all Christmas movies with Christmas horror thrown in there. It's like festival free Epcot. You live for those moments when there's nothing going on.
Oh, you gotta hit the Disney files for that one. That's deep. That's a deep cut.
I stopped watching it, but it was like maybe episode four. It just wasn't grabbing me like the first two seasons. So since you got, what do you guys think?
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
It's very true.
I don't know. What would you say? I mean, I see it as getting like, it's starting very slow.
Very,
and it's,
very slow.
The story isn't moving.
Yeah. You'd think after this point.
That's what it is. I felt it was I'm treading water here. The other episodes, something was happening all the time. And this was like three episodes in and nothing has happened. There's nothing of consequence. It feels like we're still just like on like the first page of the screenplay. And we've yet to move past it.
Yeah, I know. It's like they're still introducing everything again, and it's like, really, come on, let's keep going.
Yeah, we've already met all the characters. Tell me the story.
Yeah.
What do I need to know here?
Yeah.
You know?
And I think this is a typical, you know, this is like the hammock portion of most of these series. The series knows that it's, you know, it has captured an audience in the first two seasons, and it has this success. And they're like, and the creators and the executives get out there and they say, all right, we have a successful show. Now we have to make it seven seasons to make it worth its while, to make it, you know, worth its salt. And we have to stretch these things, and you really don't have to do that. And I think you do a disservice to the thing. Last week we talked about The Walking Dead doing this.
Yeah.
Every series that you see comes to this point where, you know, even Battlestar Galactica at a point had many episodes in the later seasons where they're just like not doing, they're just floating in space. And it's just like, let's skip those episodes. Let's make it a 10 episode arc. Let's make it an 8 episode arc. Let's have something to say and say it and get out. And that's what I loved about Maniac. And that's what I loved about, you know, films. And I think, you know, Ryan, and you're not trying not to spoil Ozark for me, but it feels like I'm sure the later seasons in that are going to do the same thing. And I think this is a formula that they've kind of come to trust, that I think with peak television being where it's at, where, you know, Netflix is producing 60 shows a month, we can't sustain this kind of filler television anymore.
Yeah, if it's any encouragement or consolation, Ozark is still very good. So you don't have to, you don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
All right. It's on the list. Yeah. It's on the list.
Exactly.
Clarissa, write that down.
Ozark.
All right, gentlemen. Hey, I want to be, you know, cognizant of Ryan's time. He needs to get up early.
That's right.
But Ryan, I hope you had a good experience. You got to see what it's like to be a trailer junkie for just this brief moment in time.
A brief moment.
Yeah, I did. I thank you guys so much for having me on. I'm thankful for all the podcasters that have made time to include me in their conversations, and it means a lot to me because I love.
Oh yeah, you're very knowledgeable.
I love talking about it, and it's I really do, you know, cherish all these moments because I am having a lot of fun. And I love making new friends, and I like sitting down and just talking. And I'm, you know, very thankful for all the opportunities that I've had to share what I love, and then get to learn from everybody that I sit down with about the things that they like as well.
Cool.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. It's been a good time.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so very much, and hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend, and I look forward to listening to the episode when it comes out
on PodCoin, so you can earn
some
money.
Yes, that's right. I need to sign up for PodCoin. I would be a millionaire by now. I could probably get a grande with a million of those PodPick.
All right, we look forward to it too. Yeah, nice. All right, Ryan. Well, hey, it's been great. Clarissa, thanks for joining us again.
Briefly, yes.
And Ted?
I saw Clarissa enjoying that beer, so it wasn't a complete loss.
I did, and I finished it.
Thanks, Clarissa. Thanks, Jimmy.
All right, boys. All right, lady.
Good night.
See you.
All right, bye now.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.